I'm John Batchelor. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman is here to take us to Hubble, Universe in a Mirror, Bob's biography of Hubble. And Hubble is aging, but worthy, and out of safe mode. Bob, a very good evening to you. Remind what safe mode means. Good evening.
What happens with Hubble, and this happens with all spacecrafts, is the computer detects something that isn't quite right. Rather than continue to do science operations, which, if go wrong, could destroy the spacecraft, the computer puts it into what they call safe mode, which means just protects it, keeps it operating, sends back a notice there's a problem, and nothing. It's held in safety position while engineers will look at the situation and try to figure out what's wrong. Hubble went into safe mode on April 23rd because one of the gyros was giving out readings that were faulty, and so it only has three gyros left. If it loses one more, it will no longer be able to take sharp images, though it'll still be able to collect data. And so they watched those gyros very, very carefully, and that same gyro had gone out in November, I think, and so it had the same issue, so they put it into safe mode. But earlier this week, a week later, the engineers announced that they've restored the telescope to science operations on April 29th, after a week, a little less than a week. And it's in good health, and it's operating using all three gyros. They did not explain anything about what happened, what they fixed or what happened, so we don't really know. We do know that if one of those gyros, if that bad gyro finally fails, they will go into what they call one gyro mode, which means they'll hold off one more gyro as a reserve, and they'll operate the telescope with one gyro. Now, you got to understand that there are three dimensions, so they use three gyros to control the telescope in all three directions so that they get sharp, precise images. If they only go to one gyro, they can then point the telescope and get data and take images, but since it will not be pointing accurately in the two other directions, pictures won't be sharp anymore. And so we have to be prepared for that. The United States has no replacement for Hubble optically. The Chinese have a telescope that's going to be a little smaller than Hubble, but comparable optical general observatory. They're going to launch next year to fly in formation with their space station so that their astronauts can maintain it. But they'll have it. We won't. And so getting observing time will no longer be as easy for this kind of stuff.
We go from Hubble, which is a success by any means, no matter how long it lasts, to the question of the Chinese space program for Chang'e 6. Where, Bob? Where are they putting it?
Chang'e 6 was launched today, actually, by China from its coastal spaceport. It is to go to the far side of the moon, land, pick up samples, and return them from Earth. This will be the first sample return mission from the far side of the moon. It's going to take about 2 months for it to get those samples back to Earth. It involves a orbiter, a lander, an ascent vehicle to get up off the moon, and then a Earth sample return capsule to bring it back, bring the material back. I've got up and behind the black a map of the moon that shows the target landing site. It's on this far side of the moon, not that far from the South Pole, but not close either, but in the southern hemisphere. This is in the largest impact basin on the moon called South Aiken Basin. It's 1,600 miles wide. It doesn't show up as a crater so much, but elevation data tells us it's there. And so that's where they're going. China's space program continues to march on, John, very successfully.
Puzzle, Bob. This is a sample return mission to the moon. Is that notably cheaper than a similar mission that we have held in abeyance for Mars? Are the costs not even comparable?
Well, two things. If you were running your program properly and a mission properly, a mission to the moon is far simpler. There's no question of that. I mean, it's only 3-4 days away. And so the communications, the equipment you have, the gravity of the moon to get up and down is much less. So, yes, it's a much simpler mission. However, the NASA compounds the problem by being incompetent in its management. And so they don't plan it carefully and over time. The Chinese have been planning its first sample return mission from a few years ago that succeeded. And this sample return mission on the far side of the moon, they've been planning and building up to this with previous missions for now several years, very carefully, step by step. They did the landing mission on the far side with U-2 rover. Before that, they launched a relay satellite to relay communications from the far side because you can't have direct communications. They've launched a second relay satellite for this mission. They've been planning this step by step. So, yes, it's cheaper. It's easier. In fact, one should consider doing this a lot to plan for the Mars return, the sample and return mission. But NASA hasn't done any of those things. So NASA's program is a mess. It's out of budget and out of control, and they don't even know how they're going to do it yet.
Sunspot, update. I'm looking at the estimates compared to where we are. We're heading higher.
Not particularly, John. This update I do every month. The previous month in April had an uptick in activity, but essentially we still seem to be in what I call the saddle between what we think will be a double peaked maximum. The predictions by both NOAA and other solar scientists ranged from high to low, and the sun has done absolutely nothing that they predicted. It's absolutely not matched any of their predictions in any way. And we're going to have a relatively weak solar maximum is what it looks like right now. We're double peaked. The predictions that say either very, very high or very weak, it's going to be more powerful than the weak prediction and much less powerful than the strong prediction. But then again, it could be anything we want. The sun wants to do. It might completely surprise us in the next few months. We just don't know, John.
And what does it mean, Bob? Why are we tracking this?
It's the sun. As you say, it's the thing that sustains all life on Earth. We got to know what the sun's like to have any idea of our future. It is the most important aspect of the climate. So any predictions about the climate needs to factor in what the sun will do, which means you got to understand what the sun will do to be able to predict the future climate. And guess what? They can't predict the future climate, no matter how much they say they can, because they can't predict what the sun's going to do. When the sun is less active, the Earth tends to cool. They don't exactly understand why, but it does. And it ties in with cooling on the sun. When the sun has more activity of sunspots, the Earth heats up. So you got to know the sunspot cycle and when it's going to happen, and they don't. They have no idea. So that's what it matters to us. That's the most direct effect it has on us, the yearly, seasonal, and decade-long climate changes. Of course, it is the sun. If the sun goes dark, we die. So knowing as much as we can about the sun is really important, John.
Okay, helicopter mission. This is the inspiration by ingenuity, which remains on the surface of Mars waiting for the Smithsonian to be built around it. Where they're now entertaining places for helicopter missions. What is the helicopter going to look like, Bob?
We don't know. We only have one concept that includes a six hub propeller system, but nothing's really known. What's going on right now is that I troll the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter archive when they release images every month, and as I do that, I come across images that are labeled potential helicopter landing site. And I've been doing this now for several years, and I've now come across a third potential location on Mars, three different places that they have taken pictures with the idea of thinking about sending a helicopter there. One is in Valles Marineris, which I think is the biggest, would be the best, only from a spectacular point of view, going inside that canyon, the biggest canyon in the solar system. Another one is at the northern rim of Hellas Basin inside a crater. Hell's Basin is the Death Valley of Mars. This would not be in the bottom, but it would have the potential to go down there. And a third is a crater where they have detected water, liquid water evidence, glacial evidence, and volcanic evidence in this crater. And it's a very rough, this is the most recent image I've got a picture on behind the black. And so we've got three different potential locations now being looked at. There have been helicopter concepts published, bigger helicopters, but this is all the preliminary research leading to proposals, and we could expect proposals appearing probably in the next 2 years.
And these the helicopter missions that are planned, inspired by Ingenuity, is it going to look like Ingenuity? I mean, it'll
no.
be bigger, but is it?
No. It'll be more like a drone. You know, think a helicopter has one prop at the top with helicopters with propellers going around. Drones, might have multiple ones around the perimeter. It's going to probably be more like that because it's going to need more lifting capability because it's going to be bigger with more equipment on it. And that's the technical stuff that's got to be figured out right now.
And solar powered.
That's a question that's got to be answered. I don't have an answer to that. Solar power has its problems, but it might be the solution. Once again, because it has its own propellers, it can clean off the solar panels. So that's not necessarily a problem. But can it provide enough power for the equipment necessary to fly this thing? That's the unknown.
Another question. Attached to a rover as a communications base?
That's an unknown. You know, these are all concepts. Why? But the places they picked, you wouldn't send a rover to any of them. There wouldn't be, the rover couldn't go very far. It's very rough terrain. The whole point of going to these places, the rover really wouldn't be practical. This would be a vehicle that would communicate directly with the orbiting satellites like Perseverance and Curiosity does. It wouldn't necessarily need a rover.
One more question. The success in the 18th century was to send out two ships, Erebus and Terra, for example, not just one. Is there any mention of two of these helicopters exploring together?
No, you're getting way ahead of us, John. These are just preliminary pictures and preliminary design concepts. No proposals have been made at all, so we have no idea what the projects are going to be. None idea. It's very possible they will decide to send two, but to two different places, but that's way down the road. We just don't know.
All right, Curiosity in Cadiz, Valles, and the word end appears here. Is this another tearjerker, Bob?
No, this is not a tearjerker. This is actually indicating the continuing success of Curiosity. They had a great panorama they posted today, so I put it up on Behind the Black because it looked down in uphill into Cadiz Valles, which is the slot canyon that Curiosity has been exploring since August of 22. Lots of beautiful and spectacular pictures. It's the first rover. In fact, first any human exploration on another world has been traveling in such spectacular landscape terrain. And so it's been in that canyon for almost 2 years, but it's reaching the end of its journey in that canyon. There is an outcrop, small outcrop in the middle of that canyon that has been targeted as a science location that the science has been wanting to get to for years. And Curiosity is now getting close. And this panorama actually shows it. I've got an overview map so you see how it relates. Once it visits this outcrop, the rover is then going to turn west and move across across the mountainside past two other parallel slot canyons to then go uphill in a third. And that's going to eventually take it up. We're still far from Mount Sharp, the peak. That's still 26 miles away. That's many times what Curiosity has traveled. And it's 16,000 feet high. Curiosity has only gone uphill of several thousand feet. It's taken a dozen years to get this far, and it's got many times that to get to the top.
I want to read this correctly. The red dots are where it's headed. The white dots are where it's come from. Is that correct?
That's right. That's on the map. The white dotted line is the line of what Curiosity has done on my map. And there's a red dotted line underneath, which was the planned route. And they've been pretty much following the planned route for the last few months. They had some periods where they had to go off it because the terrain was too rough. But they've been following it pretty precisely. And I suspect they will continue to follow pretty precisely for a while now. Things are looking good.
All right. Bob assures me that this is not cover for a orangutan mission to Mars. But I do remind Bob that they shot a chimpanzee in the air in the early days of space exploration. So an orangutan cannot be ruled out. What has the orangutan done, Bob, of note?
It was just an interesting story I saw in one of the science journals that I posted today on Behind the Black. Scientists, for the first time, have observed an orangutan use a plant to make a poultice and heal a wound. It had a wound on its face, and it literally started to eat the stems and leaves of a creeper acar plant that was known to local people to treat diabetes and dysentery and malaria. It ate those seeds, and then it took the leaves to chew them and then applied that to the juice to the wound. It then also used plant leaf mash on top to protect the wound and the medicine. Poultice did this. 8 days later, the injury had fully closed. The wound had closed. This is really interesting. How to learn to do this? In 21 years of observing the orangutans in this jungle, they have never seen anyone do this before. So did it learn it from elsewhere, from other animals, from humans? Did it just think it up itself? That's a really interesting question, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going space engineering. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.